Good morning. Today's daf in Shavuos Tes Zayin. We are in Tes Vav Amud Beis. We're starting a little bit more than halfway down the Amud. We are talking about annexing Yerushalayim and the Azara. It becomes a topic of discussion, as was the topic of yesterday's discussion, continues to be a discussion topic of today's discussion as a result of the Mishnah. Opening Mishnah of the second parak. And when I say opening Mishnah, I really mean the Mishnah. There's no other Mishnayos. So described Mikdash, Tumas Mikdash VeKadashav, a person while in the state of Tumah walking into the base of Mikdash. So as long as we're talking about going into the base of Mikdash, so the Mishnah briefly describes what is the base of Mikdash, or more to the point, how do you imbue the base of Mikdash with Kedusha? Let's say that we have the area of the base of Mikdash and we want to annex a portion of the Azara. We need a larger Azara, or we want to annex Yerushalayim, so we need a larger Yerushalayim. So there's a process of annexation. The Mishnah gave us a good amount of detail in terms of what exactly is the annexation process. The Mishnah finds itself on the bottom of Yudal Amud Aleph. What do you need for the annexation? So you need, says the Mishnah, you need the king, you need the prophet, you need the Urim V'Tumim for the Kohen Gadol, you need the Sanhedrin of 71, you need two carbon todas, you need song, you need a Beis Din, and you need a march around the new perimeter of the annexed area. Okay. In the course of yesterday's daf, so we discussed in great detail when we talked about the carbon totem, what exactly were we talking about? We're talking about the animal, we're talking about the mincha portion. So yesterday the Gemara was very specific. We're talking about the bread portion of the carbon toda, and being that there are 40 loaves of the carbon toda, we're speaking more specifically about the chametz portion. Chametz portion, as we learned yesterday's daf, of the 20 isronim of flour that's used to make up the 40 loaves of bread for the carbon toda. Of those 20 isronim of flour, half of them, 50% of the flour, is going to be used for the chametz loaves. So a clear indication that the chametz loaves are going to be the largest, and so two of those loaves are going to be used as part of the procession. And that's talking about the annexation of Yerushalayim, because as we mentioned yesterday, carbon todas and carbon shlamim eaten within the perimeter of Yerushalayim, and so therefore, in order to establish or determine or to demarcate the area, the perimeter of Yerushalayim, so we're going to use the carbon toda, which is what could be eaten within Yerushalayim. What about if I want to annex the Azara? So yesterday we had a brief discussion in the Gemara about using something similar to the Lachmei chametz of the carbon toda. Is there any chametz in the as a regular mincha for kosher kedushim? So the answer is yes, there is, and that's the shtei alechem that's offered on Shavuos. That's made up of chametz. It's allowed to rise to ferment. When I say allowed to, meaning it's the mitzvah. You're supposed to do it. The problem was, as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, is that we could not coordinate the day in which you're makdish those shtei alechem, which is on the yontif of Shavuos, and the construction of the Beis Hamikdash, meaning the construction of the Beis Hamikdash will be before Shavuos, it'll be after Shavuos, but it won't be on Shavuos. You can't build the Beis Hamikdash on Shavuos, and so therefore we can't have coordination between the building of that next portion of the Azara and the shtei alechem, which is offered on Shavuos. The one suggestion the Gemara left us off with yesterday was maybe Motzei Shavuos, because on Motzei Shavuos, the Shtei Alechem is still not pasul. You have a day and the following night to eat it. So on Motzei Shavuos, Shtei Alechem is good. So why not then have the new constructed area of the Azara left for Motzei Shavuos? Do most of it before Shavuos and then the little bit after Shavuos. And that would be a way to coordinate the two. But the Gemara points out that in of itself is going to be a problem because we don't build the base of Mikdash at night, as we learned in yesterday's daf. We moved on to the discussion of Shir, what songs are going to be sung. So Prakim and Tehillim, which Prakim and Tehillim? So the Gemara actually identifies specifically which Prakim in Tehillim. Unbelievably, yesterday, the first day of Hanukkah, so we learned that one of the Prakim of Tehillim that was says was Arumcha Hashem Ki Dilisani, Abayis L'David. Okay. So anyway, so that was the that was one of the Mizmorim. We left ourselves off right at that point in time. We're picking it up in the Gemara right where we left off yesterday. And Tetzayin Amud Beis, two dots. Rabbi Shuman Levi Omer, Amalu Lahani Krai Vigani. So Rabbi Shuman Levi says that, look, these psukim talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu protecting us. So what I would do, says Rabbi Shuman Levi, is I would read these psukim before going to bed. So, and as I mentioned yesterday, and you open up a siddur and you go look at Kriya Shema Shalamita. So Kriya Shema Shalamita, which is brought down in the beginning of the Gemara in Brachos. So, in other words, there's a mitzvah to say Shema before going to bed at night. And on top of that, if you look in the Nusach of the Siddur, you're going to see that all the Prakim and Tehillim that's mentioned over here are included in the Kriyas Shema Lamita, based on the statement of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second, Rav Yeshua ben Levi, the same Rav Yeshua ben Levi who said, V'hamar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, asa leis rapos b'divrei Torah. What's going on here? You're not allowed to cure yourself with words of the Torah. Words of the Torah are meant to sustain us in terms of our neshama, but not in terms of our guf. You're not allowed to use the Torah to cure. So the Gemara says, L'hagin shalei yishani. The Gemara says, no, we're not looking at the psukim of the Torah to cure. It's there to provide a hagan, it's there to protect us. So the Gemara says, when we're saying that it's aser, it means that you have a wound. And now what you're doing is that you're saying the pasuk on the wound in order to cure the wound. That you're not allowed to do. What you're supposed to do is go to the doctor. But to say a pasuk over that, you're not allowed to do. The Gemara says, di'ika maka aser v'sulo. Now, wait one second. You have a maka, you have a wound, and you're saying psukim. And now we're saying it's aser. The Gemara says, remember the Gemara back in Sanhedrin? You could say a lot more than it's aser. You could say, and the Gemara now is going to quote what we learned back in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in the 11th parak. We learned back in Sanhedrin, the 11th parak, that if you whisper over a maka, you say a pasuk over a wound that you have on your body, so you're not going to get a portion of the world to come. So it's not just aser; it's much more than aser. So the Gemara says, "Hi, itmar la, Amar Rav Yochanan berokek shanu lefishe maskirin shen shemayim al rikika." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but also remember what we learned back in Sanhedrin. No, saying the pasuk over the makeh, it's wrong. You're not allowed to do it. It's aser. But when the mission was talking about not receiving a portion of the world to come, what the mission was describing was that you spit on the area, right? They somehow like the idea that the saliva on the open wound is going to somehow be beneficial." And then, after now you have the spit right in front of you, now you're saying a pasuk, so that's real chutzpah, that's real insolence. You're now saying a pasuk over rikika, over saliva, that's just such an affront, it's so disrespectful. So for such an individual, that person doesn't have a chelek in olam haba. Just saying a pasuk over a makeh, that's wrong, it's aser, but not, what the Mishnah in Sanhedrin was describing was something which was more disrespectful. In the Gemara now, we are towards the bottom. The Amud Beis the Ma'achim v'shtei Tos Achareihim. So we're right now looking at the exact procession of how they marched around the new and next area. So Lamem the Beis Din Kamei Toda Azle. So the Gemara says, now the way the Mishnah describes it, it sounds like Beis Din is in front of the Karban Toda. And the Gemara says, yeah, but if you look at the source material, which is what we said yesterday, and now we're looking at it once again, so that's not the way it seems to indicate. Meaning in the psukim in Nehemiah, where there actually was a procession. So the Gemara says, read the psukim carefully. See what we can conclude. By Yelech Achareim Hoshai v'Chatzi Sar Yehuda. So they after them. So then went the princes of Yehuda. Sounds like that first the Karban Torah went, and then afterwards everyone else followed. So Hachikamer based on Ma'achiv Sheitodos Mahalchos. Ubeizdin achareihem. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to read the Mishnah, we're going to just a little interpretation in the Mishnah, but it does read into the Mishnah. Basin walks, the Shtei Todas go. Basin is walking after the Shtei Todas. Yes, it's true. The Basin is mentioned before the Karban Todah, but in terms of the procession and who goes first, the Karban Todas go first. Okay. Ketza Mahachos. So now, if we can have this picture, and I mentioned yesterday, with the help of Rashi. So the picture basically looks like this. Now, mind you, by the way, the picture that I'm about to paint, the visual picture I'm about to paint, not exactly the way Tosu seems to be describing it on this Amud right here, but I'm going to go back, I'm harking back to the Rashi on the Amud Aleph, on Tezvav Amud Aleph. So here's what it looks like. We are now leaving, we're with the Karban Todas, and when I say Karban Todah right now, I'm talking about the loaves, and specifically the Chametz loaves. So with two chametz loaves and the Sanhedrin and whoever else is available, if there's a Kohen, if there's a Navi, we'll talk about what if they're not available in just a moment. But with the Kohen, with the Navi, with the Sanhedrin, so we're all now going to be exiting the new annexed walls. We are now going to be making a right-hand turn. And now with the two loaves in the front, Sanhedrin behind them, and, you know, whoever else is part of the procession. And so now we're going to go in a clockwise perimeter outside of the walls of the city, and with a hakafa. I assume they only need to go around one time. I don't know. I don't know any other. It's an assumption, but I think I'm right. So with a clockwise clockwise march around the perimeter. So now we were mekadesh the new area. Okay. So far so good. So now. And Rashi says that they were marching outside of the new walls. Okay, these two loaves that were being transported. Exactly, what is going to be their positioning? Is it going to be the two loaves are going to be going side by side one another, or is it one in front of the other? This is going to be subject to a debate. Ketz ma'achos, Rabbi Chiver, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Chanan Marzu Kenegizu, VeChanan Marzu Achar Zu. So one has it that the two loaves were going side by side. And the other has it that they were going one in front of the other. So, and the Gemara goes on to explore both of these positions. Man de amrzu kenegazu hapanimis hachte mekarv lechoma. And now, if we say that they were going side by side, so then you understand the terminology of panimis, meaning it is the one closer to the wall, because that's the one that is more interior, meaning neither of them are interior. And again, the way Rashi is describing it, they were both outside of the wall. But at least we can understand that one of them does have a proximity to the wall if they were side by side. And we can call that one panimis. Gemara says that's good. But man damrzu achrzu apanimis hachta makav lebeisdin. Hachta makav lebeisdin. So now, if, however, they were not going side by side, but they were going one in front of the other, which one now is panimis? Meaning which one is more interior? Because vis-a-vis, if we were to draw a radius from the center, so they're both equidistant. So the Gemara says, you're right. So in terms of the word panimis over here, if they're one in front of the other, so we don't mean panimis in terms of interior towards the center. We mean panimis meaning which one's closer to the Sanhedrin. So the second one obviously is going to be closer to the Sanhedrin, to the Beis Din. Okay, Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah. Ha-panimis ne'achaz v'achitzon and nisrafis. Now, remember what we learned back in the Mishnah? And that was, is that the interior loaf is going to be eaten and the exterior one is going to be burnt. So Bishlam Laman Damer Zu Achar Zu. So the Gemara says, actually, this works out better if one walked in front of the other. Because Amat Lahachi Panimis Ne'echelas. The Gemara now has just a phenomenal visualization. It will be hard to understand, admittedly, but it's a great visualization, which is Mishim Da'asi Chitzona Kama V'Kitchala. Because here's basically how we're going to look at it. If they're in a straight line, one is in front of the other. So as they're going around the new perimeter, the first one is creating the Kedusha, as if to say with every step that it makes now, it's actually concretizing that area, consecrating that area, and the one immediately behind it is now in a consecrated area. Okay? That's the way the Gemara is visualizing right now, and the Gemara says, and then I understand. The first one you're not allowed to eat, the second one you're allowed to eat. But the Gemara says, Elaman damrzu kenegazu. But the Gemara says, but if they're walking side by side, tarvaya bahad adatika mikache. So the Gemara says, so now, as they are marching, they are both now at the front of the line. So either they're both creating the Kedusha, which means that neither of them are sanctified, or they're in an area that's already Kadosh, which is, at this juncture, difficult to understand why should that be. But let's just, in other words, the fate of one should be the fate of the other. And so why should one be eaten and the other one be burnt? So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Let's go back to your first assertion, that they were going in a straight line, one after the other. So the Gemara says, so you really think that the loaves are going to be Mekadesh? There is an opinion, which we're going to see in just a moment, that everything that we mentioned in the Mishnah, the Kohen, Navi, etc., it's everything we mentioned in the Mishnah are necessary components to create the Kedusha. Don't tell me that right now the front loaf is the one that's creating the Kedusha and everything behind it now is Nikdash. That's simply not true. Every detail is part and parcel of the consecration. And now there is an opinion which we're going to see in just a couple moments from now that says that you don't need everything. You only need some of it. But the Gemara says, but the two loaves of bread, it's a package deal. In other words, if I only have one loaf, you're not going to bring it. And if I have no loaves, so then I have no loaves. But I'm not. In other words, but it's not one is creating the Kedusha and the other one is just coming along for the ride. It is a package deal, the two loaves of bread. So Ella, I'm Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, so fine. So finally, Rav Yochanan concedes, and Rav Yochanan says, we're on the very top of Tazayinim and Aleph, Api Navi Nechaz, V'Api Navi Nisrafes. So the Gemara says, you're right, meaning, so is there a rhyme or reason why one of the loaves are going to be eaten, the other one's going to be burnt? No. The Gemara says no. Gemara says that the Navi just simply tells us that the exterior one is going to be burnt, the interior one's going to be eaten, not because the exterior one is creating the Kedusha, and the one behind it is now going in an area that's Mekudash, is just simply, that's simply the way it works. But not because it's a functional, not for a functional purpose. Okay. All right, so we are now, have a little bit of a better picture in terms of how the procession would work. The two loaves would be in the front. The configuration, would they be side by side or would they be front back? That's a machlokas. The Rambam seems to favor the front back, in other words, in a single file. The Sanhedrin would be immediately behind it. And then, presumably, you had a king, a Navi, Kohen Gadol, or Vitumim, etc., etc., etc. Okay. Kol Shalom Nasas Bechol Eila. Now, Itmar, Rav Huna Amar Bechol Eila Tanan, Rav Nachman Amar Be'achaz Mikol Eila Tanan. Very interesting machlokas we alluded to just a moment ago, but here the Gemara spells out the following machlokas. Rav Huna says that in order to create an annexed area, which has the full Kedusha of, if we're annexing the Azara, the Azara. If we're annexing Yerushalayim, so then Yerushalayim. So in order to create a proper annexation, you need every single detail that was just outlined in the Mishnah. You need the two loaves, the Kohen, the Melech, the Sanhedrin, etc., etc. In other words, and if you leave out a detail, so then it has not been imbued with the full Kedusha. That is the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Nachman Amar Ba'achas Mikol Eila. And Rav Nachman says, no, that's not true. Meaning that, yes, there is a laundry list of things that we need in the Mishnah, but you don't need all of them. Meaning it'd be nice to have all of them, it'd be nice to check every box, but in order to create Kedusha on the next area, as long as I have one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, so that's going to be enough and that'll be sufficient. So that is a machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Tanan. Rav Huna, Rav Nachman Amar Ba'achas Mikol Eila Tanan. Rav Huna Amar Bechol Eila Tanan Kesavar. And now what the Gemara is going to do is the following. The Gemara now is going to line up the sheet of Rav Huna and Rav Nachman and connect it to a machlokus that we have time and again throughout Shas. About a half a dozen times throughout Shas, the Gemara brings up this topic and that's the following. Yehoshua came into Eretz Yisrael and he conquered the land of Eretz Yisrael and took approximately 4 centuries. But ultimately, and obviously I'm not describing Yehoshua anymore, but then, after about 4 centuries of being in Eretz Yisrael, they then built the Beis HaMikdash, imbuing it with Kedusha. Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash. So they're really, when we're talking about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, we're really talking about two different things. We're talking about the Kedusha of the land of Eretz Yisrael, vis-a-vis Trumas, Maestros, Shvius, etc., etc. And then on top of that, we're also talking about the Kedusha of the area of the Yerushalayim, Har Habayis, Azara, Beis HaMikdash. Once the Kedusha was given to Eretz Yisrael and to the Beis HaMikdash, so is that Kedusha now going to be a permanent Kedusha? And even if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and we know that it was twice, even if the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, does that mean that the Kedusha still exists in perpetuity on that area, even without the actual physical Beis HaMikdash, or no? Do we say that the Kedusha is really connected to the Beis HaMikdash? Once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Kedusha goes away. And that means then that when we go back to build another Beis HaMikdash, we have to re-consecrate the area. And this is, as the Gemara says classically, Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa, and then it's either going to be Kishla Asid Lavo or Lo Kishla Asid Lavo. So does the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, now there really are two different discussions. The Gemara over here is kind of going to bounce between the two, but for the most part today, we're really talking about the Beis HaMikdash. And the question now becomes, is the Kedusha there and remain there, even without the physical house and physical structure, or no? The Kedusha is there as long as the Beis HaMikdash is there. Once the Beis HaMikdash goes, the Kedusha goes away, and we need to reconsecrate. And here's what the Gemara now is going to do. Tie and connect the machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman as to whether or not everything in the Mishnah is necessary to the question of whether Kedusha Rishon HaKishla Shaisa and whether it's Kishla Asilava. Here's how the Gemara makes the connection. Rav Huna, let's go back to the Gemara, we're 4 lines down, on Tetzayin Amad Aleph. Rav Huna Amar Becholelu Tanan Kesav. Kedusha Rishon the Kishlo Shais the Kishlo the Lavo. So Rav Huna is of the opinion that the Kedusha Rishona was there and there in perpetuity, even without the Beis Hamikdash. So let's go back. Let's go back to a time where the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar of Bavo. Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan. We spent a lot of time at the end of the 11th parak of Sanhedrin detailing the destruction of Beis Rishon. And now, after 70 years of Galus, so we're going back into Eretz Yisrael and we're rebuilding. Now, let's think this through. Ezra and Nehemiah, together with approximately 42,000 Jews, the Navi describes, are going back into Eretz Yisrael, rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, can they check off everything that we mentioned in our Mishnah? Meaning that there are a number of things in the Mishnah that they need to consecrate. Can they check every box? The answer, of course, is no. They can't. They can't check every box. Because one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah is Urim V'Tumim. For the second Beis HaMikdash, did they have the Urim V'Tumim? No, they did not. Rashi points out the other things that they were missing. You can take a look at the towards the top. Rav Huna Amar B'Cholel Tanan Kesav V'Chulei Klamer V'Yimishim Kiddush Ezra Dehave B'Vaisheni B'Lo Melech V'Lo Urim V'Tumim. So you can't check off a king. There was no king. They didn't have Urim V'Tumim. Darminu B'Maseches Yuma. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Yuma. Chamisha Dvarim Chaser Mikdasheni Eish Shchina Aron Urim V'Tumim Ruach HaKodesh. Many things deficient from the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have it. So, if everything was necessary in order to imbue Kedusha into Yerushalayim, Ezra historically simply didn't have it. So if he didn't have it, so what did he do? It's very simple, whatever he could do. But he didn't have everything. So, if Ezra is doing everything he could, but he doesn't check every box over here, what is that telling you? So Rav Huna is saying, it must go like this. Here's the logic ladder of Rav Huna. Start with the premise that Kedusha Rishona Kitcha Lashaita Vikitcha La'asid Lavo, and that means to say that Ezra was not consecrating, didn't need to consecrate, already done. Yoshua conquering Eretz Yisrael, Shlomo HaMelech building the Beis HaMikdash has now given the consecration to that area in perpetuity. From that point going forward, it's there. What was Ezra doing? Ceremonial. That's all. According to Rav Huna, it was ceremonial. Going back now to the Gemara, Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisav Kishla Asilava VeEzra Zecher Ba'amahu Da'avad. So what he was doing is the best he can, but I don't really mean the best he can. Meaning, it wasn't enough to imbue with Kedusha because he didn't need to be mocked as shit. Oh, okay, fine. So under those circumstances now, if we want to create now an annexation to the Azara, to Yerushalayim, so what do we need? So we're going to need to check off every box. Meaning for us to create an annexation, an annexed area to that which was already consecrated.
Wasn't the second temple larger than the first?
Yes. For sure.
We would have to annex that area.
Right. So... Right, and so according to Rav Huna, how would that area get annexed? It's an excellent question. I don't know. I don't know what that answer would be, or what it would look like. Rav Nachman Amar Abachas Mikolela. Now Rav Nachman says you don't have to check every box of the Mishnah. Meaning, yes, the Mishnah does give a large list of things that we need, and according to Rav Nachman, it'd be nice if we had everything, but we don't need everything. Meaning, any one of the things now. I'm not sure according to Rav Nachman, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm not sure if Rav Nachman, in other words, it could be any one of the items mentioned in the Mishnah. He seems to be saying that. But whatever the case is, you don't need everything in the Mishnah, and that's enough to imbue it with Kedusha. Now the Gemara says, according to Rav Nachman, so what does that mean? Rav Nachman holds, let's go back to the Gemara, I'm going to read inside the Gemara. Rav Nachman, I'm Achaz Mikolayla Tanakas of Kedusha Vishon Kishal Shaisa, Velo Kishal Asalava Ve'ezra, Kedusha Kaddish. What Ezra was doing was actually imbuing it with Kedusha. He needed to. Because when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first base of Mikdash, so now the area is devoid of Kedusha. Now when Ezra comes to rebuild the Bayit Sheni, he needs to imbue it with Kedusha. And so therefore we know he didn't have everything, meaning the historical reality is such. He did not have the Urim V'Tumim, he did not have a Melech. We know he didn't have everything. So therefore, ergo, now if we just keep following the logic, therefore it must be that when the Mishnah gives a list, the list is not an all or nothing list. You don't need everything in the Mishnah in order to imbue with Kedusha. One of the items in the Mishnah would be sufficient. Alpha gav de lo havi Urim V'Tumim, even though there was no Urim V'Tumim, it's interesting, Rashi also adds Melech. Even though there was no Urim V'Tumim, still, as long as you have some of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, that's enough to imbue with the Kedusha. Okay, so where do we stand right now in the Gemara? Machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, whether or not you need everything in the Mishnah in order to imbue the area with Kedusha, and the Gemara now connects it to the classic machlokes of whether or not Kedusha Rishon a Kishla Shaisa, and Kishla Silavo, or Kishla Shaisa, velo Kishla Silavo. Eitzvei, Rav Lo Rav Nachman, the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Nachman, Kol Shel Nasas B'Cholayla. So read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if you don't do any of these things, meaning it sounds like from the Mishnah, you need to fulfill, bring everything mentioned in the Mishnah. So, Tani Ba'achas Mikolayla. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what you'll do? You'll either the Gemara here is suggesting an edit of the Mishnah, or just a reinterpretation of the Mishnah in any event. Just simply say, Ba'achas Mikolayla, one of them. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here, Abba Shalom, Mishnei Bitzim Hayubar Mishcha. So this Brice over here, it's a lengthy Brice, it's a Tosefta actually. It describes Yerushalayim. It basically sets it on two plateaus. The lower section of Yerushalayim, the upper section of Yerushalayim. Okay, I'm not the person to talk to geographically in terms of what areas we're describing Yerushalayim. I'm really going to be describing this Brice of this Tosefta in much more abstract terms, simply because I don't have enough knowledge of the geography to give you a good description. Abishalom Mishnei Bitzim Hayu Bahara Mishcha. And the Har Zesim, you had two areas, Tachzon Vel Yona. The lower area, the upper area, Tachtona, Nikdesha B'chol Eilu. As far as the lower area is concerned, so it was imbued with Kedusha with everything mentioned in the Mishnah, meaning it checked every box, and therefore it checks out. It's got full Kedusha. Eliona, Nikdesha B'chol Eilu. So, and as far as the upper area is concerned, so it didn't check every box, meaning they did some sort of ceremonial act with it. Here comes the important part. It was circumscribed within the wall. That part's tricky, but clearly that's the case, but it doesn't have really the full Kedusha. Ela be'ole gola, shelo be'melech v'shelo be'urim v'tumim. The ole gola annexed this area, but of course they didn't have a king and they didn't have the urim v'tumim. Here's a mention of the king. They didn't have a king and they didn't have the urim v'tumim, so they couldn't check everything in the box of all the things that the Mishnah listed that we need. Tachtona shaita Kedusha sagamura. So as far as the lower area is concerned, so it received the full Kedusha, and therefore, you do everything that you could do in Yerushalayim. Eat Maitzer Sheni, eat Kachim Kalim. Now it's interesting, watch what happens in this Braisa. So, Ame Aretz Nechlasen L'Sham V'Ochlen L'Sham Kachim Kalim, Avon Lo Maitzer Sheni. So the Ame Aretz go in there, meaning we're now describing the upper area. So they would eat there and they would eat kachim kalim, but they would not eat maaser sheni. V'chaverim ochlin sham kachim kalim and maaser sheni. We're describing the lower area. So the amei haaretz would eat kachim kalim, but they would not eat maaser sheni. And as far as the chaverim are concerned, people who are more careful about the performance of halacha, so they would eat kachim kalim and maaser sheni. El yonah shalaita kedusha sagamura, but as far as the el yonah is concerned, which was only in the next area that was annexed by the Ole Gola, from Ezra Nehemiah time, where they didn't have the Urim V'Tumim and they didn't have a king. So this is not really a bona fide sanctioned annexed area. So Am Eretz Ayu Nechnas L'Sham V'Ochlem L'Sham Kachim Kalim Avala Maaser Sheni. So the Am Eretz would come in there and they would eat Kachim Kalim in that area, but not Maaser Sheni. And Chavirim in Ochlem Sham Lo Kachim Kalim V'Lo Maaser Sheni. But the Chavirim, knowing that this is not really a sanctioned area, it does not have the Kedusha, so therefore they would eat nothing over there. They wouldn't eat the Maaser Sheni, nor would they eat the Kachim Kalim. And why is the upper area not properly annexed? Because you didn't have everything. The Tosefta over here says it clearly. You didn't have everything, therefore it's not properly annexed. Valama Kitshua. So why was it sanctified? To which the Gemara just viscerally reacts to that line of the Braisa. Lama Kitshua, the Gemara interjects over here. What? It doesn't have kedusha. Hamar lo kichua. El alama hichnisua. So the Gemara says, you're right, correction. So why was it now enveloped within the new walls of Yerushalayim if it doesn't in fact have the proper kedusha? Mimnesha torfa Yerushalayim Isa. It was an exposed area of Yerushalayim. It was, from a security standpoint, a soft spot. It was very easy to conquer Yerushalayim for that area, so therefore they created a wall over there. Even though it was not properly annexed, and even though it does not have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, but they put a wall in that area just to provide better security for the city of Yerushalayim, even though it didn't have the full status of Yerushalayim. Okay, a couple of things in this Braisa. First and foremost, the reason why we just quoted this entire Tosefta is because the Tosefta says with absolute clarity that in order for an area to be annexed, properly annexed, you need everything in the Mishnah, including the king, including the Urim V'Tumim. When Ezra comes back into Eretz Yisrael, so he did annex a portion of Yerushalayim, but it's not really annexed. Meaning he built a physical wall because it was a soft spot security-wise, but it was not properly annexed, and it couldn't be. He didn't have a king, he didn't have the Urim V'Tumim, it couldn't properly be annexed. This Braisa clearly subscribes to the viewpoint of you need everything, right? Like Rav Huna. So this is a nod to Rav Huna. Certainly seems to indicate also that Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa Vikichel Asilava. In other words, because the Kedusha is just simply a continuation of Bais Rishon. And even though there was an attempt to give more Yerushalayim, more Kedusha, but obviously they couldn't simply because they didn't have everything. One other point of the Braisa, which I'm just going to go over the Rashi outside, not inside. I encourage you to look at the Rashi later. The Amei Haaretz have a funny practice, and that is that the Amei Haaretz, as far as the Chaverim are concerned, people who knew, they knew. If you're going to eat your Maaser Sheni, if you're going to eat your Kashim Kalim, you're going to do so in the lower area, which is the area that has real Kedushas Yerushalayim, but not in the upper area. The upper area is just a security, it's a security zone, but it doesn't really have Kedushas Yerushalayim. So the Chaverim knew. What about the Amei Haaretz? So they were funny. For Maaser Sheni, they would eat it in Yerushalayim proper. For Kashim Kalim, they would go to the security zone, even though it does not have Kedusha Yerushalayim. That's strange. What's that all about? So Rashi over here writes, he says, this is my pshat. So he says, look, as far as Maaser Sheni is concerned, we know the Gemara in Tanis. The Gemara in Tanis says that when you take off Maasers properly, you're going to become wealthy. So it's a funny Rashi, but it speaks to us, it speaks to human nature. The Maisros, they knew, was a segula to become wealthy. So they took the Maaser Sheni seriously. So in other words, they knew in their minds that, you know, that this is like real Yerushalayim and, you know, quasi Yerushalayim, you know, the El Yonah. So when it comes to Maisros, they knew that it was a segula to become wealthy. So, oh, segula to become wealthy? Well, we're going to go eat it in the proper Yerushalayim, in the Tachtona. But then when it comes to the Kashim Kalem, so the Amei Haaretz are like, okay, in other words, we're going to eat in Yerushalayim, fine. This is Yerushalayim, and that up there also is Yerushalayim as well. They weren't as careful with it because there wasn't the promise of becoming wealthy, not like Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you take off your maasers correctly, and you treat them correctly, and you eat them correctly, so it's a school to become wealthy. That's Rashi's explanation of the behavior of the Amei Haaretz. Right, no, but meaning for the Kashim Kalim. Yeah. Right, but for the Maaser Sheni, like, what is the difference? So Rashi says,
they just didn't listen to it.
Right, again, that's correct, but for Kashim Kalim, that's right. But for Maaser Sheni, they clearly knew that there was a difference. And so Rashi says, because they, you know, because of the promise that the Maaser Sheni, by treating Maasers correctly, going to become wealthy. What I just said is also in Rashi. Okay, continuing now in the Gemara. So Tanahi. So what do we have right now? A clear braisa that favors Rav Huna. Now Rav Nachman is not going to be left out of this discussion. I mean, it could be, but Rav Nachman also knew the braisa, and Rav Nachman is still felt his position is correct. You don't need everything; you just need some of the things. What Rav Nachman is going to have to do is he's going to have to marshal another braisa, another Tosefta, and the Gemara does exactly that. We are now in the middle of Tezayin Amud Aleph Tanahi. The Gemara now concedes that. Yes, that Braisa clearly works in Rav Huna's favor. We have another Braisa. Rabbi Elazar Shematik Shir Yabonim Be'echal Asim Klaim La'echal U'Klaim La'azaros. Rabbi Eliezer says, I heard. Now, he is going over a Masorah that he hears about regarding the building of the Second Temple. Rabbi Eliezer obviously living towards the end of Bais Sheni, so for him this is his history that is 4 centuries old. So it's a 4 century old tradition that he's repeating. My numbers are approximate. So the when they built, so they actually set up, first they set up curtains and then they built. Now when it comes to the Heichal, so they were building outside the curtains, and when it comes to the Azara, they were building inside the curtains. I'm Rabbi Yeshua Shamati. Now Rabbi Yeshua also goes over his version of history, meaning this is the Masorah that he received, which is Shemakrivim Alpha Pishain Bayis, Ochlim Kashi Kashim Alpha Pishain Kalayim. Kashim Kalam Umaiser Shani Alpha Pishin Choma. Mimnesha Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa Vikishla Salava. Rav Yoshua says, here's what I heard. I heard that as Ezra and Nehemiah were putting up the Second Temple, so even before the actual physical edifice went up, so everything had the same Kedusha that it had upon exiting Yerushalayim some 70 years earlier. Meaning that we would offer karbanos even though there was no Beis HaMikdash. We would eat Maaser Sheni, even though there were no walls. That is the Mesorah of Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua's position couldn't be any clearer. The Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa, the Kishla Lasadlava. The Shlomo HaMelech Kedusha that was imbued in the First Temple exists and continued to exist even after the destruction of the First Temple and into the Second Temple. So if that is Rabbi Yoshua's position, and presumably Rabbi Eliezer's arguing, so now, Rabbi Eliezer is taking the viewpoint of lo kitchel asid lava, and the Gemara now makes that suggestion. La mechlad Rabbi Eliezer sava lo kitchel asid lava, and so now it would seem to be that we have a machlokas tanaim on the matter. So Rav Nachman would say, good, you Rav Huna can hold like Rabbi Yoshua, and I'll side with Rabbi Eliezer. So I'm le Rav Huna le Rav Hashim in my dema dekulei I'm a kedusha rishon kitchel l'shais v'kitchel asid lava mar. My Dishmiya Lekamar, my Dishmiya Lekamar. So the Gemara says, but you are assuming a lot in the Braisa. You assume that they're debating this issue. The Gemara says, you don't have to assume that. Could be that both Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer say that the Kedusha Rishon is Lashaita, Ula Asilavo, and as far as what they're reporting what was given over to them as a Mesorah. Question, V'chitem Aklaim L'Rabbi Eliezer Lamali. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if the Kedusha was there, going back to Shlomo HaMelech's Kedusha, so now, why do I need the curtains? So the Gemara says, let's new Sabama. Gemara says, very simple. Because even as we're building the Beis HaMikdash, the workers over there do not want to look into the area of the Beis HaMikdash, or maybe I'll say it better. We don't want the workers to look into the area of the Beis HaMikdash, so for purposes of Tznius, we put up a curtain. So as they're constructing now, they don't have to see into the area. Tznius Ma'amah. Right? Remember the Mishnayos in Midos. We're going to be seeing it not that long from now, on the coming up ahead. When they annually, they would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in order to redo the walls. So they would be almost like an elevator shaft, right? Where the only thing they would be seeing is just the walls in front of them. But they wouldn't see any of the other parts of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And again, Sneas, meaning that's part of the Sneas, same thing over here. Elahani tonight the time the Gemara says, okay, what about the following Braisa? Okay, Gemara says, right. So the Braisa we just quoted may not be arguing on the issue of Kedusha, Rishona, Kishla, Shaisa, and Kishla, Asilavo. So the Gemara says, why don't we consider now another Braisa? Am Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Lama, Manu Chachamim, Es Elu. Why are the Chachamim counting this? This is a Mishnah in Erchin. The Mishnah in Erchin now is pointing to various cities throughout Eretz Yisrael that has the Kedusha of Bate Arechoma. Walled cities that are throughout Eretz Yisrael have a certain extra level of Kedusha. The Mishan Erchin, which spends a perek, at least one perek, I don't remember well, but at least a perek talking about the halachas of Bate Arechoma. We know that you buy a house in Bate Arechoma, so after a year of ownership, it's yours now indefinitely, doesn't go back in Yovel, and there are other halachas that apply to a Bate Arechoma. So the So as they are now going back into Eretz Yisrael for as the academics would say, for the second Commonwealth. So what were so they're counting the cities around Eretz Yisrael. What would they be counting them for? Shikashalu b'nei agola matzuela v'kiddushum. So they sanctify the cities. Avarishonas bitlu mishabat laharetz. But as far as when we were exiled from the Bais Rishon, so we no longer had the Kedusha all dissipated. Alma Kesavah Kedusha Rishon, the Kishal Shaisa, Velo Kishal Asid Lavo. So you see that once we were exiled from the first Beis Hamikdash, the Kedusha went away. Now it's interesting, as I mentioned in the introduction to all this, for the most part we're talking about the Kedusha of Beis Hamikdash, Yerushalayim. Over here we're talking about Bat Erechama, we're talking about the outer environs of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, seemingly the Gemara over here is like going a little bit back and forth in terms of which Kedusha we're talking about. But okay, anyway, Uriminu. Am Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yosef Vichyalo Bavad, Hayu, Valo Kvar Nehmar, Shishim Ir, Kol Chevel Argov, Mamuchos, Og Bavashan, Kol Eila Arim Bitzuros, Choma Gova, Gova. So the Gemara quotes the Pasuk over here gives a description of the cities still retaining their Kedusha. Elalama Manu Chachamim Ezelu, Shekeshalo B'nei Agol HaMatzu Eile V'Kitshum. So the Gemara says, Kitshum, what do you, again, a visceral reaction of the Gemara. Hasha Hamrin L'Kama D'Lo Tzrich L'Kedusha. We say you don't have to be Mekashdi's Bati Arichoma. Ela Matsu Eila Uman So in other words, it wasn't a question of imbuing them with Kedusha, it was just an issue of finding them, identifying them. As far as Kedusha is concerned, they already had the Kedusha. Velo Eila Bavad, Ela Kosha Talabiyat Chamasuras Mehavasecha. Shemekevitz Choma Miyamos Yoshua Ben Nun, Kol Mitzvos Eilus Nohagas Ba. Mimnesha Kedusha Rishona Kisha Lashaisa Vikicha Laasid Lava. So here in this Brisa, we now have it that these cities had Kedusha and continue to have their Kedusha. All we're doing is just simply identifying where the cities were. Fine. Now, Kashya de Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi, de Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi. So we just quoted back-to-back Brisas of Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi regarding the Bati Arichoma, whether we're imbuing them with Kedusha or we're just simply identifying where they were and they already had Kedusha. So you see that's a machlokas. The problem, of course, is that it's not a machlokas tanaim, it's a machlokas within the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says, Ibai Samatrai Tanaya Libid Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So it could just simply be that there are variant mesoras of what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi holds, whether or not the Kedusha Rishon is Kishla Shaisa and Kishla Silavo, or not. Or the Gemara says, Ibai Zema, or another suggestion, Chanimina Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yossi Amra. So the Gemara says, or it could be that one of them is not Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, but rather mistaken for Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yossi. Detain Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yossi Omer, Asher Lo Chama. Now, when the Torah says the word Lo, the Torah, we have a Kri, we have a Ksiv, right? Lo with an Aleph means it does not have a wall. Lo with a Vav means it does have a wall. How do we take those two disparate ideas and put them together? The Gemara says, Alpha Pisha Ein Lo Achshav, Bahaya Lo Konon Lachin. Even if it doesn't have a wall now, it did have a wall, so it's going to have the Kedusha of Bati Arichoma. So a clear indication that according to Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yeshua, Kishla Shaisa, Vig Kishla Asid Lava. What comes out from the Sugya now has officially come to a close as we turn to the Amud Beis. So basically what the Gemara now brings down is Machlokas Atanayim. Whether or not Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa Kishla Asid Lava. And then it turns into a discussion of, we know historically Ezra, when he came in to build Bais Sheni. So he was either A, re-sanctifying the area because the sanctity went away when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first base of Mikdash, or it was just what he was doing was ceremonial. But the Kedusha was already there. Now, and just going back now full circle to the beginning of the entire Sugya, so Rav Nachman Rav Huna says, now that will then address the issue of when the Mishnah gives us a list of the things that we need, are they all necessary? Or you just need some of the items. One or some of the items. If you say, I'm just wrapping up the entire sugya. If you say the Kedusha is Kishla Shaisa V'Kishla Asilavo, and all Ezra was doing was just ceremonial, so that means that if you and I wanted to imbue it with Kedusha, we need everything listed in the Mishnah. And what I just said is the opinion of Rav Huna. As opposed to Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says no. That when Ezra comes into Eretz Yisrael, he is actually imbuing it with Kedusha. We know he didn't have everything listed in the Mishnah because you don't need everything listed in the Mishnah, and that's the opinion of Rav Nachman. Okay, so machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, really it's a practical machlokas of whether or not I need everything in the Mishnah in order to imbue with a Mishnah, in order to imbue with Kedusha, and it really is a fundamental machlokas of whether or not Kedusha Rishona Kishla Shaisa Kishla Asilavo. Okay.
Rav Huna, the Rahuna is saying that the Kiddushah is permanent, right? What would you need to imbue it more Kiddushah?
We're not. The Gemara says we're not. The Gemara says it's all ceremonial. What Ezra was doing was just ceremonial.
No. But he's saying that you require all five elements.
Right.
But if the Kiddushah is permanent, why would you even need the five elements for it? What was the need for?
Annexation.
Oh, I see. Expansion.
Yeah. Nitma ba'azar v'nelma mimenetuma v'chulei. Okay, we are now towards the top of, well, not towards, we are at the top of Tezayin Amud Beis. There were two things that we were describing in the Mishnah. Going into the Azara and while Tameh, for that you don't need any, there's no time consideration. You go in, you go out, you had a halama, you're chayav a karban olah v'yareid. And then the other situation we described in the Mishnah is you're in the Azara, you come across the Sheretz, and so now, if you make a beeline out of there, you're good. If, however, you linger, so now you're going to be chayav a karban olah v'yareid. And what we're going to be describing, I'll save this for tomorrow. We'll start this sugya fresh tomorrow. What we're going to be describing is the exact nature of lingering. What exactly does that mean? You're lingering in the area, at which point you're going to be chayav a karban olah v'yareid.